This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly and movie TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is episode 258, and we'll be discussing our From the Outside In topic, what makes a great movie stunt. We'll also talk about some of our favorites from over the years. We've also got the latest in movie and TV news, as well as our own trivia segment. We've got a spoiler review of Split as well. If you like this episode, you can be sure to get the Ho on the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on iTunes, which where five-star reviews are very much appreciated. You can also find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. Please do share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter. You can follow us at BuyPopcorn. You can also find us on Reddit and what are the other sources you like. You can also support the podcast at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, where some tiers will get you a bonus episode of the show. My name is Scott Clark, and I'm joined by my co-host, the guy who stands firm on his claim that The Hollywood Outsider has been downloaded more than any other podcast, period, John Davenport.
I also believe in aliens, UFOs, and anal probing.
Very good.
And I'm
good
to hear. I'm an Aquarius.
All right, and the random comment of the day award goes to John. All right, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. It's Tuesday. It's time to record a show, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Is it a little weird that I'm running point tonight? Does that seem odd to you?
You know, it does feel weird that to not have Dad at the helm. You know, we got all these different buttons and things around here that
there's lots of switches and stuff.
We could break something.
Let's hope so. How far in the episode before I make a video game reference? You want to place your bets now?
Right now, the pool's going pretty good. I started a pool off on the side someplace so that, but it's you got good odds. You got good odds.
All right. Well, as you can probably tell already, Aaron is not here today. He's actually got a work function that he has to attend, so he will not be joining us this evening. However, we do have a very special guest. Also joining us is my co-host and producer from The Gaming Outsider, Josh Faulkner. Josh, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm looking forward to doing this and then spend another couple hours with you right afterwards.
Oh, yeah. This is how I love to spend my night away from my family.
Great. You're gonna be so sick of talking with me by the end of the night. It's going to be ridiculous. So
I need something to drink. Like, I have nothing to drink in my recording space here, so I'm going to have a horrible throat. It's going to be dry and scratchy and all kinds of awful by the time we're done here.
Well, it could go the other way. You guys could be cuddling by the end of the show.
That's true.
Who says that won't happen?
Aaron and I do that all the time.
Much, so very much possible.
Those aren't two pillows.
I see what you did there.
Is that a flashlight in your pocket?
No, I'm just happy to see you. Well, before we get into the news, guys, we got to talk about a couple of things. First off, and we got to be very spoiler-free with this because John has not viewed it yet, but how about that Logan trailer?
Oh, it looks so good.
My goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And when this movie was announced, I had no interest in it because I didn't like the other two Wolverine movies.
I thought they were okay. I mean,
the first one I thought was awful. The second one was bearable. This one looks like a whole nother level. It took a trailer, you know, for me to actually gain interest in it. But after I saw that, I was sold. This is actually one of my most anticipated movies this year.
It definitely jumped up there for me as well. And I wasn't really sold on the first trailer at all. I mean, I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. But it's nothing I just had to see or run out. Man, the one I saw was a Red Band trailer, which I believe is the one that was out there for everybody. And holy cow, this looks like a completely different movie than I expected it to be. And again, John, I'm dancing around this. I won't spoil anything for
you
because I know you like to stay fresh. But that last 4 seconds just kind of blew my mind a little bit. I don't know about you, but not expecting that whatsoever. I am 100% on board. And we don't have that long to go to see that one either, so really excited to see Logan.
A couple months. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of the news that they announced that this has nothing to do with the X-Men universe, or it's devoid of the X-Men universe?
Well, it is in some capacity, right? It's just not really connected to anything recent they've done. I mean, it still has Professor Xavier and stuff in it, so I mean, there's still characters there. I don't think it's going to connect to anything that they've done recently. I think it's what they meant by that. I could be wrong, but I'm okay with that. Like, I don't think it needs to be. Because they kind of broke off and did their own thing, and I really like the tone that this movie's thrown off so far. So to me, that's refreshing, and that's kind of what this needs, if you ask me.
So you're okay with the idea of, hey, you know what? This doesn't have much to do with that bad X-Men movie we just put out. This is going to be a good one.
Yes, yes, totally. You know, but I don't think they're going to go steer that much off course. You know, I have high hopes for this.
Do you think that's just to get people to be like, look, guys, this isn't going to be bad like that last one was? It was more like distancing themselves from that than anything else?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think people still have, you know, Days of Future Past and stuff like that and Apocalypse in their mind. And I think they're just kind of differentiating themselves from the Bryan Singer flicks that came out recently.
Right. That's probably the bigger thing they're going for there. But, I mean, I can't imagine it's possible to have Logan or Wolverine in a movie like this without – I mean, it's in the universe. It's you've got some of the same characters. It's just not you're not going to bump into any of the characters. Is what I
would have to guess. Yeah, and plus you have to see that they got to differentiate themselves a little bit too because this movie's rated R.
Right.
So they don't want to stick too close to the X-Men stories that little kids are used to because this movie definitely looks like it's not for little kids.
Because we all know how that worked out for Deadpool.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, they had a mature rated Wolverine game that worked out really well, and. You know, I just like Wolverine in that spade. Yep, there's one. Ding. No, but
Josh doesn't count. It's you that counts, Scott.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I like Wolverine, that more mature sort of tone, you know. And so this is definitely something that I'm very excited for.
Well, he's such a mature rated character. I mean, he's very dark, very violent. I mean, it's surprising they made it work so well in the PG-13 movies as they did. I mean, you know, we all wanted more, but it still worked quite well. So,
and this is the last one that Hugh Jackman's doing, right?
Right. Yep. Which has that added effect of got to see it just because I want to see how he's going to wrap that up.
I just couldn't see anyone else playing him.
I can't either.
That's going to be tough. Can you imagine? Can you remember when he got the role several years ago when everyone was like, Hugh Jackman, are you kidding me? Yeah. And now nobody can see anybody else. It's hysterical.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody will try? I mean, do you think that'll happen?
I think if they should just avoid Hugh, when it's time to recast it, they should just go with the X-23 as opposed to the Logan Wolverine, just because it's going to be next to impossible and it's still going to be too fresh. And Hugh Jackman made the role iconic, so you can't take that away from him just yet. It's going to need at least 5 to 10 years before you can come out with a different Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't Spider-Man this thing and just have a new Spider-Man every year.
Seriously.
Right.
We don't need that.
The other thing I wanted to talk about real quick is I don't even know if you call this news, but it's just insane to me that the title of a movie has blown up and made that much stir on the internet as Star Wars Episode 8, which got a new after the colon, a subtitle.
Subtitle?
And it's called The Last Jedi. That's all we got. We got a screenshot, a black background with the Star Wars logo underneath. It says The Last Jedi. And it says
not only a Star Wars logo, but a red Star Wars logo.
Right. Which, man, there's so many people reading into this thing and having conversations. And that's just the power of Star Wars, is it not? That you can just release a poster with three more words to it, and all of a sudden people are just, their minds are turning.
Yeah, it's crazy because when I was told about this, I mean, my first reaction was, wait, is that real? Is that the real one? Like, I got really excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a title, you know. But I mean, that's just a little something to get us through until December. So, I just can't wait for a trailer for this thing. I'm hoping we get one by May. You know,
I can wait.
I can't, man. I want to know anything and everything I can about
this
movie.
Same
here. I'm that excited for it.
Well, they've got the Star Wars Celebration in April, and then, you know, Star Wars Day.
That's when they'll probably release it.
And May the 4th is, you know, unofficially or officially, I don't know what it is, it's Star Wars Day. So I imagine by at least then we'll have something, if not a teaser. But just so many questions about what's going to go on. What does The Last Jedi mean? Does that mean Luke is dying? Does that mean Rey is the last Jedi? There's people arguing
people are looking into that a little too much. I think it just basically means that Luke is the last Jedi because it even states that in the opening crawl of Force Awakens. You know, I think that's what that means. And I don't think it means anyone's dying or anything. I think they just named it because Luke is known as the last Jedi.
Well, and what's interesting is that to me makes it sound like because of the title crawl in 7 having those words, the last Jedi in it, and this being the title of 8, that it feels like this is going to be much more Luke focused than we might have, at least I anticipated.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting because the last one had, like, what, a second of Luke?
It was, you know, I thought my job was just to look intensely at the camera for a little bit.
Yeah.
That was a really well paid, you know, 45 minutes of work he did that day. So
yeah, bless him, man. Wait, I have to lose all this weight for this? Okay. You're going to give me money for it? Okay, let's do it.
So are you guys expecting them to go safe with this movie at all? Or are you actually expecting them to go like a deeper, darker route? I know they've said that it's going to be darker than Force Awakens, but with Rian Johnson in the helm here, I mean, we got Looper out of him, you know, and Brick and stuff. I mean, the guy's definitely a thought-provoking director and writer, and he wrote it. So what are you guys expecting out of this, really, in terms of story?
It's hard to say what I expect, but I want them to take the risks, and that sounds like such an easy answer. But to me, Episode 7 was a bit safe. As much as I love that movie, and I've watched that one more times than any other new movie in the past couple years, they've got that out of their system now. You know, they had so much familiar stuff, and they were ready for something fresh and brand new, and go in a direction that we're not expecting. You know, 7 had some of that, but you know, flip it on its script a little bit, just blow our minds. That's kind of what we want. That's what we got out of, you know, Empire Strikes Back when that came out, and you had the reveal that Luke was, or Vader was Luke's father, and all that. I want something like that.
Spoiler.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding.
You know, I think we're gonna end up getting something probably as far as like shades of darker to. Yeah, as far as shades go, it'll probably be a few shades darker, but not too much darker. I mean, if you like the couple weeks ago, I finally got to see the scene from, what was the name of the last damn movie?
Force Awakens?
That's the one. All right. So I finally got to see the scene from Force Awakens where Chewbacca rips that one guy's arm off and throws it across the room. So if they filmed all that kind of stuff into Force Awakens and we didn't get it, I don't know if we're going to get anything like that in this next movie. I think I have a feeling they're going to play it safer just because of that, you know, that sort of evidence from Force Awakens. But I don't think it's going to be as dark as a lot of people want it. I think it may be just tones darker, but that's just about it. I don't think we're going to see any craziness in it.
Well, what makes me think about this the most is that I could see Disney wanting to play it safe, but I could also see Rian Johnson not wanting to follow their lead. You know what I mean? He's definitely that kind of writer that I wouldn't see. He would want to just make an easy picture. So he's an interesting choice as the director. And I love the guy. I mean, I've loved pretty much everything he's made. So, and, you know, I'm excited to see how this ends up. And that's why I want a trailer so bad. I want a glimpse of how this movie is going to end up, you know, in tone and everything. So,
well, to echo what you're saying with Looper, which was a great freaking movie. One of my favorite things about that movie is that they didn't, you know, shove the science of what's going on down your throat. There's actually like a conversation.
That would made that movie work so much better than anything else.
Seriously. And I feel like people are so well invested in Star Wars that if he just keeps going that route, granted that's might be more of a writer thing than a directorial thing. But you know, we know Star Wars. We don't need as much exposition and everything to explain it. Just give us what we want, and that's more Star Wars, more intrigue, more lightsabers, more force. Just give it to us. So
yeah.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to movie and TV news. The Oscar nominations took place this morning, actually, as of this recording. So we've got the different lists here. We're going to go over Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, and then Best Supporting Actor and Actress, as well as Best Director, and kind of discuss them really quickly. So first off, the Best Picture. We've got The Arrival, which surprised me that they got Best Picture nomination.
That's such a great Charlie Sheen movie, let me tell you.
Also, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, La La Land, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight. Now, have any of you guys seen all of those?
I have only seen two.
Two?
Of them. Yes, I'm still trying to catch up.
I'm still kind of trying to catch up myself. I have not seen a lot of these, though I've got feelings for each one of them, though, so that's weird.
I've only seen one of them, and the one that I actually have seen.
Pathetic, guys.
I know.
We're in bad shape.
Well, I mean, to be fair, some of them only came out recently, and it's, yes, you know, and there's been a lot of...
Some of them were very, very limited you know, releases as well. So
exactly. So,
fun.
But so that's the ones that we've got. I'm actually kind of disappointed there was no Deadpool. There was kind of like rumors floating around that Deadpool might have been on there.
Was anyone really expecting Deadpool to be there? I mean, come on.
Not expecting it, but kind of hopeful.
But, what I'm really happy about is seeing Hell or High Water and Hacksaw Ridge on there. Those two being on the list makes me hopeful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're both surprising to me too, especially Hell or High Water. I was not expecting that one. The rest of them are pretty safe choices, I think. I'm really glad Arrival was here because that's one of the ones I did see, and I really liked that movie. Mm-hmm. I feel like that got snubbed in the Golden Globes.
Very cool. Next up is Best Actress. We've got Isabel Huppert. Did I pronounce that correctly? Huppert?
Good enough.
For the movie Elle. Also Ruth Negga for Loving, Natalie Portman for Jackie, Emma Stone for La La Land, and Meryl Streep for Florence Foster Jenkins. Again,
is there a time she's never nominated for an Oscar?
Yeah, she just had to show up.
Every year it's like, what was she in? Okay, yeah, Meryl Streep, whatever. Yeah,
they just have a slot for her on there every year just automatically. Which Meryl Streep movie goes in here for Best Actress?
Meryl Streep's being nominated for Star Wars? I don't remember her in Star Wars.
She showed up, we had to put her someplace. Yeah, she was a stormtrooper in the background that was there for like 10 seconds.
Nice. I'm really thrilled that Ruth Negga is on the list because she has been quietly coming up the ranks and she deserves to get nominated for something. Cause my first introduction to her was from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then I liked her a lot in Preacher, and just to see her here for Loving, I'm really happy for her on this.
Mm-hmm. I'm really happy to see Natalie Portman on there as well. I know that, you know, she's obviously part of Star Wars and all that. And while I didn't see Jackie, mm-hmm. I've always respected her as an actor, and I'm really happy to see her get nominated here. So,
especially after she thought her career was down the tubes after Star Wars,
right?
You know, she really thought that's going to kill her career, and you know, and this is, you know, this is what, her second Oscar, third Oscar nomination, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there was Closer, there's Jackie, and then there was Black Swan.
Right,
I believe she was nominated for all three. So yeah, I used to have the biggest crush on her too, by the way.
Oh, me
biggest
too.
Biggest crush on her. Yeah. Yeah, she's absolutely. Just adorable.
She really is. Best Actor, we've got Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea, Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge, Ryan Gosling for La La Land, Viggo Mortensen for Captain Fantastic, and Denzel Washington for Fences. This one, man, I have no idea which way this one's going to go.
I was going to lean towards Denzel, but I kind of want to see Viggo get it just because we can all say, Viggo! You're like the buzzing of flies to him, Denzel.
I agree with you. I think Denzel's going to get it. That performance was phenomenal. But Viggo, I just want to win an Oscar, period. I haven't seen Captain Fantastic. I've heard fantastic things about it. See what I did there? Yeah. But I want to see him win just because I think he's an amazing actor. I think Andrew Garfield's a little miss here because I, even though I really liked that movie and I thought he did a good job, I don't think it was best actor worthy at all. So,
Interesting.
Well, it's probably because of his coif of hair.
Yeah. he had a very crappy Southern accent in that movie. His performance was fine. His accent bothered me, but I don't think he really did anything that really stood out for me in terms of like of wowness, you know, in his performance. It was just good enough to me.
Sure. Best Supporting Actor, we've got Mahershala Ali for Moonlight, Jeff Bridges for Hell or High Water, Lucas Hedges for Manchester by the Sea, Dev Patel for Lion, and Michael Shannon for Nocturnal Animals. I just really love Michael Shannon so much. I would like to see him get recognized. Yeah. He's one of those actors that I feel like he's always been like that one guy in that one movie. You know what I mean? Like you just recognize him from things. And granted, he's been in a lot bigger titles, but he is so, so good. And
he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I'm surprised to see Dev Patel on there again. I mean, I thought once he won for Slumdog Millionaire, he was just going to go off the radar, you know? So even though I haven't seen Lion, I'm just happy that guy's getting back in there and getting recognized.
Oh, yeah. He's a lot of fun to watch, too. I watched him on Newsroom, and he's fantastic on that show as well.
Yeah, he's really good.
I'm seeing a lot of overlap here as well. There's lots of movies that are getting repeated between all of these award nominations. So And that moves us to Best Supporting Actress, Viola Davis for Fences, Naomi Harris for Moonlight, Nicole Kidman for Lion, Octavia Spencer for Hidden Figures, and Michelle Williams for Manchester by the Sea. I feel like we've said some of these movies for all four at this point.
But, yeah, we have. Each one of them has showed up. My vote's for Viola Davis. I really want to see her win. I really want her to see good things to happen for her. She's amazing, so she deserves it.
Mm-hmm. Every time I keep seeing Fences on this format we're reading, I keep thinking it says feces.
Wow.
I'm sure Viola Davis appreciates that.
Yes. And that has nothing to do with the movie. I'm not trying to be a dickhead. I'm just saying. I keep thinking feces every time that pops up. No, but I think Octavia Spencer, I think, would be a really good choice here.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun to watch, too. She's got that very sassy, confident character in like everything she plays, and it looks like she's carrying that through at Hidden Figures as well too. So,
yeah.
Well, we're not going to go over all of the awards that were nominated, but we got one more we're going to cover right now, which is Best Director. So the first one is Denis Villeneuve for Arrival, Mel Gibson for Hacksaw Ridge, Damien Chazelle for La La Land, Kenneth Lonergan for Manchester by the Sea, and Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. Any standouts there for you guys?
Denis for me, that I love it. He's probably one of my newer favorite directors. Anything that guy touches is gold. I'm so happy he's doing the Blade Runner sequel. So happy he's doing the Blade Runner sequel. And I'm always rooting for that guy because I love his movies to death. But I think Damien is definitely going to win for La La Land here.
You think so?
I don't know. Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice either.
Well, I think when we get closer to the Oscars, we're going to do our good old, make our bets and get our scorecards and everything for this like we do every year, which is always a lot of fun. So we'll get close. We'll talk about that in the future. I've got my money on the one that out of all of those that I've seen like in every category, and that's La La Land. I really think that they're going to take home the majority of them, and not just because the Golden Globes. I mean, in years past, movies that kind of give a pat on the head to Hollywood do very, very well at the Oscars, and La La Land really does that. And I'm not downplaying that movie at all. I seriously love that movie. It wasn't my favorite of the year by any stretch of the imagination, but it was seriously good. And if you guys are listening and you're turned off by La La Land by it being a musical, don't be. There's a musical number at the beginning that made me think I was going to be watching a full-blown musical, and the rest of the movie really isn't that at all. I get past that opening scene if you're afraid of musicals and enjoy the rest because it's really fantastic.
That's kind of where I'm at because I just find musicals kind of corny, how everyone just breaks into song and dance randomly. Mm-hmm. Not to say I've never enjoyed a musical before. I do like some, but it's a genre that I just can't really get into. Mm-hmm. I do really want to see this, though. But it's not something I'm going to rush out and see right now, you know. So I feel like I kind of have that against me, to where I can't root for that movie just for that reason. But no way I will say that it's going to be a bad movie or anything just because I don't like musicals. But I love that director. Whiplash was amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. Good luck to him. Totally.
Absolutely.
I find musicals easier to stomach if you just imagine everyone has a mental deficiency or something. They're all just crazy, and that's why there's a musical happening. That's
the last musical I remember actually really enjoying was, funny enough, Sweeney Todd.
That was a good one.
I just thought the music was really, really fun in that movie.
I think you just backed up my argument there.
There you go. That's a good point there. All right, let's move on. You guys remember The Lawnmower Man from 1992?
I am God here.
Yes, well, I remember that movie.
Well, if you guys listening are not familiar with it, it's a movie starring Pierce Brosnan about virtual reality. And it looks like we're getting a series based on the film, but it will actually be in VR. We've talked about the possibility of watching films and television shows in virtual reality in the past, but it hasn't taken off very much as of yet, at least in the mainstream audience. Is this something you guys would be interested in checking out?
Is Pierce Brosnan in it?
We don't know for sure yet.
Because I really need to see his hairy ass chest in VR.
Do you? Get real up and close and bury your face in it?
Motorboat just have the hair.
Got to be able to pet it.
Yeah, right up in your face. Yeah. If they're going to translate anything to VR, it'd be this or Tron.
Yep.
Lawnmower Man's not really a very good movie, if you ask me. I mean, it's been a very long time since I've seen it. Again, the only thing I remember about it is I am God here. But it's, I mean, okay, sure. I don't know how this is going to pan out, though. I mean, are really people clamoring to see movies in VR right now?
I don't think they're clamoring for sure, but I think with VR, just as it is in the gaming world, it's one of those things that you kind of have to experience to really appreciate. But that said, that's a weird thing to ask people to do, to sit in the dark by themselves for hours.
I have experienced something similar. I mean, on PlayStation VR, they do have little mini like movies that are in virtual reality, and they are really cool, mm-hmm. but none of them are compelling enough to make me want to sit for longer than 5 minutes and watch it play out.
Right.
So, I mean, there's definitely an opportunity for them to do something very cool here. I don't know if Lawnmower Man is it, but you know, I'm going to go in with an open mind, and I'm a big fan of VR. So, I would definitely check something out like this, but just for the experience to see how it works. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, man. We'll see how it goes.
I've heard some really cool things that you can do with VR. There was a few months ago, I was listening to something where they're talking about how when they did that big Saturday Night Live special where they had everybody from all the different casts show up, they actually had a VR 3D camera on top of the actual camera so that it can capture everyone in the room. And you could stand in that camera spot and just look around and be like, okay, well, there's this person. I'm this close to that person, and I can nearly touch them. And they were commenting on how cool that feeling was. But for me personally, I don't think VR is going to be anywhere where it will be worth it for them to put something of quality on it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think they're going with Lawnmower Man. Lawnmower Man, though, for the time was an interesting and cool movie. It's not really something of quality. Where like, your idea of going Tron would be much more to a higher level of quality. But mm-hmm. why throw that out there for such a limited amount of people to watch it? And For me, I don't really care about VR. I'm not really big into gaming right now. If it was me 15 years
Shame
younger.
On you.
I know. I'm so sorry. I had to give it up for something else. But anyhow, if I was 15 years younger, I'd probably be more about it, because I'd be more interested in it, because I'd still probably be more of a gamer than I am now. So,
yeah,
you know.
I've done something similar to what you were describing. They have concerts, like VR concerts on PlayStation VR, which you can watch. And basically what they do is they just have a spot in the crowd where they have a 3D camera. And you can just sit there and watch it, and then you're like literally in the crowd, and you can look left and right, and there's like people just like jumping around and waving, and you know, got their lighters out and everything, and it's kind of cool. But I feel like the technology needs to be a little better before they really do that well, because it looked kind of blurry and grainy, and it was not to the quality I would have liked to make me feel like I was actually in a real concert, you know. So I still think they have a ways to go with the technology before something like this becomes mainstream. Totally.
Yeah, it reminds me of the days of the early Netflix show, where those early shows that were Netflix originals just weren't quite good, mm-hmm. and they always felt like a fake, a cheap knockoff of something that was really good. And mm-hmm. so reminds me of that.
Yeah.
Do you guys think we'll ever get to the point where we have like virtual reality theater experiences, where, you know, there's a new movie that comes out and you go to the theater, and then every seat comes with a little virtual reality headset? You pay like $20 or $30 to go do this thing, to see a movie that you can only see in the theater. And then do you think the logistics of that would just be a nightmare?
Yeah, it would be a nightmare with the logistics. I mean, you'd have to clean the hell out of the lenses on those helmets. I mean, Scott, you've played VR.
Mm-hmm.
You've had it fog up on you, like the glass, right, when you put the helmet on and off and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. people get them nasty.
What kind of games are you guys playing? Jeez.
Well, it's just taking it off, because it kind of seals around you. Then, like, if you break that seal, like, moisture gets in there and your lenses will fog up. It's really weird. But you'd have to clean those things like crazy. And the staff would have to just Purell the hell out of those things. So
yep.
That would be really weird.
And plus, just people damaging them, and you know, worry about people paying for them, and all, it just could be a mess. So,
yeah, talk about transfer of germs back and forth.
Right? Yeah. Well, let's move on before I get yelled at for getting straying too close to video game topics. But
we aren't there yet. We're safe so far.
All right. We've got some casting announcements for the sequel to Jurassic World this week. Chris Pratt is obviously going to be in the film, but he's going to be joined by Daniela Pineda. She's I'm not really familiar with her. She's been in some TV shows, one called The Originals and one called The American Odyssey. She's going to be the female lead, as well as Justice Smith, who's from Paper Towns and The Get Down, which is another, speaking of Netflix TV shows. And then Rafe Spall, who's from Prometheus, and Toby Jones from Harry Potter, Captain America, and The Hunger Games. There's also a rumor that the movie will be filmed in London. What do you guys think of these acting choices, as well as the thought of dinosaurs running around in out there in England?
I am more concerned about London being where they're filming out than I am the cast. The cast's going to do their job. I'm sure they're going to be hired on for all the right reasons, though I'm going to miss, I believe his name is Jake Johnson from the first one. I'm going to miss him, but because it doesn't sound like he's coming back for the second one. But I am more concerned of the idea of them being in London. I don't think we need to. It would be so much better if it was just a jungle, or if it was a theme park or something to that effect. I don't want to see them stomping around London, and I don't want to see them stomping around big cities. It just feels like a cheap ploy to me.
It feels like Lost World a little bit too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I just don't really know where they're going to go with this. You know, I mean, Jurassic Park, I mean, with five movies, I mean, what else is left to do, really, other than just kind of step on each other's toes with the previous films and kind of tread old ground? Mm-hmm. I don't really know what they can do with this. And the cast seems fine to me. They a lot of lower and like unknown people, you know, they didn't get any A-listers or anything with here, which is fine. You know, I mean, obviously they want Chris Pratt to be the star of the show, but I just don't know how they're going to do this story and make it interesting.
Well, again, they're filming in London. It's mostly urban there. There's not a whole lot of jungle or forest or anything like that out there as much as there is in where they filmed the last one. So,
we might be thinking too literal about them filming in London. They could actually be filming in the studios in London because that's where
green screen,
green screen and all that jazz. That's where Star Wars was filmed. So it's possible we're being way too literal about them filming in London. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not going to poo-poo the idea of it. They brought us a good, fun story the first time around, or the fifth, sixth. I can't count anymore. I think whatever time that was last time, it was a good story and it was fun and I really enjoyed it. So they might be able to repeat that. The cast is just fine. So, you know, I'm really glad we're going to have Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard back, because the two of them were pretty, pretty great. However, if they have her sprinting through London in super high heels, again,
so angry about that.
I'm going to be mad.
Shyamalan twist. Jack the Ripper was really a dinosaur,
right?
We're not going to see pterodactyls flying around Big Ben. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Let's not have that. That'd be bad.
Just perching there on one of the
it's cold there.
Our hand. It's cold. It's a good point. They're going to have to do it in the summer for sure if it's outside.
That's right. You know, and even then it gets kind of chilly. You know, it's just, I don't understand. The dinosaurs don't like that, don't they? I mean, I don't know.
They don't like that. They're just going to put on a sweater.
You ever see a chihuahua in a sweater? They get kind of pissed. Now imagine a velociraptor. That's just bad news, man.
That's a good point. I'm picturing a velociraptor in like a parka now. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
He's going to try to do his Crocodile Dundee thing with the damn velociraptors, and it's going to be like, dude, you put me in a sweater.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to our From the Outside In topic. Let's talk about stunts in movies. We've talked in the past how we felt that those who perform these ridiculously dangerous feats don't get recognized enough, but we've never really picked apart stunts themselves. So what to you guys makes for a quality stunt? Is it that added element of danger that's more impressive, or rather like the spectacle of what's actually happening, or what stands out? What makes a good stunt to you?
The spectacle, definitely. Anything that they can pull off and makes me go, how the hell did they do that without mm-hmm. someone dying, is definitely a good stunt to me. Mm-hmm. Then, but yeah, okay. Anything they can do to make me just wonder how they pulled it off is what I really like.
All right. What about you, Dan?
That's about the same for me. If you got me wondering what it is, or if I try to picture myself in that position, and I try to picture how wet my pants are going to be after I live through that, if I happen to live through it, because there is going to be some accidents happening halfway through any of these stunts that these people pull off. I mean, it's got to have a great amount of spectacle. Or it has to be like a great puzzle, something that I want to break down in my mind just to think about. that how amazing they did, what kind of logistics they put together to make that happen, whether or not CG was used, and that sort of thing, as far as pushing and pulling the idea to an extent where I can imagine how it might have been made is a lot of fun for me. Just stuff that really just excites me. It's cool.
That's really cool, and I agree with you, but I think for me, what really makes a stunt stand out to me, and this sounds like I'm going to be down talking what actual stunt people do, but what makes me sit up and take notice of a stunt is when I know either beforehand or after the fact that the actor from the movie is actually the one doing the stunts.
I mean,
you look at like Jackie Chan did it back in the day. Like it was just nobody ever did his stunts except for him.
And Tom Cruise doesn't want to.
Tom Cruise, yep. There's some that we're going to talk about here shortly, probably, that just people do their own. That's something awesome to me. I mean, you mentioned Tom Cruise. His people try to talk him out of doing a lot of that stuff for Mission Impossible, you know, for risk reasons and for insurance reasons. I mean, you know, but he said, nope, there's no way I'm not doing it. And that is super impressive to me.
He's always like, no, Xenu will protect me. I can do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So which movie stunts have stood out to you guys as the most memorable or maybe even most impressive?
One of my favorite ones that popped up just recently was Tom Cruise in Rogue Nation. Mm-hmm. When he's strapped to that stupid plane, it's incredible. This was one of those times where I was pissed that I saw trailers for something, but it ended up working out to my favor. But I was so mad that in the trailer you see him strapped to that plane and he's flying off. It was so cool. The guy is 50 years old.
What, 60, isn't he?
No, he's 53 right 53. Now. At the time of he was filming Rogue Nation, he had to be right around 50. So he
John's got that shit on his calendar. He's like, oh, it's almost Tom Cruise's birthday.
Right. You know, I'm really hoping I look like that when I'm 50. Come on. I can figure it out a way to shrink and look like Captain Xenu, right? But anyhow, go ahead.
And not only that, but like I said, it is him. That's not done on a green screen. That is
no, it's not
completely him strapped to a plane. And I just poop my pants thinking about it, much less actually doing it. I'm allergic to height, so that doesn't help.
But he's so tall. How is he so?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the thing that's really cool, if you think about the logistics of that being strapped to the plane, he had to figure out how to keep his eyes open. He had to figure out how he's going to survive if some sort of bird strike happens or any piece of debris come when the plane has to get up to a speed where it's taking off. Any piece of debris that that will hit him at that point will actually do some massive amount of damage. So mm-hmm. they put so much work into clearing that deck just to make sure there was nothing that was going to fly up into him. There was a lot to it. And what I think was cool about this movie was that wasn't even the most impressive stunt of the movie, really.
What was the most impressive stunt?
The car chase and then the motorcycle chase and diving into that computer. And then, you know, where does it stop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And back to the plane one, you make a good point. He couldn't. It's not like he could wear goggles. He had to keep his eyes open. I mean, just think about like if you've ever been like on a motorcycle or stuck your head out the window of a moving car and how hard it is to keep your eyes open and keep them from watering. And that plane's going a lot faster than a motorcycle, you know, so.
And he's right behind the engine, so all the fumes and all that jet fuel that's being burnt is going right into his eyes.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Speaking of Tom Cruise, how about the one from the previous Mission Impossible movie where that skyscraper in Dubai?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
To me, that was more impressive.
That, for me, again, with my fear of heights, made it incredibly impressive, especially – I mean, granted, he's strapped in. Don't get me wrong, but man, you get out there. I saw that in IMAX, and I got vertigo just watching that look down to the ground. In that, it's just insane. But to actually do it and feel the wind and it just makes me sick to my stomach to think about it. And then swinging around back and forth, and I just can't even imagine. I can't imagine. Josh, what's yours?
Well, there's a couple categories I have. So for me, when I think of like one of the craziest stunts I've ever seen, I think of Bad Boys 2, that highway chase scene where they have the big spools or whatever it is that they're throwing off the back of the trucks and they're bouncing all over the streets and knocking in the cars and everything. Again, that just goes back to how did they do that? How do these cars survive that, you know? And that's probably one of the coolest action sequences involving cars I've ever seen in a movie.
It was just so ridiculous
of the movie. Yeah, and that's part of the reason why it's so cool. You know, say what you will about the movie. I know a lot of people hate it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
But,
well, who hates Bad Boys 2? Point them out to me.
Critically, that movie was trashed on.
Yeah, I'll show you what I'll do to a critic.
but yeah, I mean, that's what comes to mind for me. Also, with stunts, like, I'm a huge Kung Fu movie fan. And a lot of stunts just involving actors and fights are very interesting to me. And anything that comes out of a Raid film is just insanely awesome, and it always makes me question how they pull these off, these fight scenes. I mean, because some of them, they just look like they're actually breaking each other's bones and using knives, and they're jumping down stairs and flipping over stuff. And you know, both of those Raid films are just, it makes me just wonder how they put these things together. They're so fun.
I had one I wanted to mention as well too. You talked about car chase sequences, and it's not a car chase, but it involves a vehicle. In The Dark Knight, when you remember that scene when the 18-wheeler gets flipped from the back end forward and flips completely over, that's one that I was lucky enough to not have seen in a trailer or anything. And when that happened in the theater, my mouth just fell open that I seeing what I just saw. And like, I did some looking into how they did that, and there's actually like a giant piston in the ground that like hit the back of the truck to go straight up. But think about like all the physics and everything that has to be implemented to make sure you get that right, so that the truck goes perfectly straight on its back end. Yeah. And not to mention, but there had to be a guy driving that truck. There was a guy in the cab of that thing for that whole thing, with reinforced windshields and all that. It just was just insane to me. And nothing really like made me just go, holy crap, I can't believe what I just saw, than that scene.
Very similarly to Death Proof, Tarantino flick, with Kurt Russell. Some of the car chase sequences where they're holding on to the cars and everything, and that were pretty crazy too. I mean, one of the actresses in the film was an actual stunt woman. So
Zoe Bell.
She's pulled off some really cool stuff in that movie too. And again, that's another a movie people seem to hate that I loved. And they had some really impressive stunt work there too.
You know, back to Bad Boys 2, another good chase they had in that was there was the chase where Marcus's sister was driving that SUV, and right behind it you had that car transport that had the semi that had all the different cars on it.
Yeah.
And then behind that you had Marcus and Mike in the Ferrari chasing after him. And it was just you had cars that had personalities. The SUV that Marcus's sister's was driving looked like a scared rabbit. You had a giant bear right behind it in the form of that transport carrier. And then, you know, your bad boys are in the Ferrari, and that looks like a fox just, you know, dipping in and out of traffic. That race was so, that chase was so cool. And then they start throwing the cars off of the transport and destroying everything around them was amazing. I really just loved the way that one was done. It was just so much fun. And the thing that I think was hysterical is that chase takes such a long time. You'd almost expect them to be in Key West, because that's the only bridge long enough for them to be able to do that whole thing for that long.
Yeah, totally.
So I want to talk a little bit about what I mentioned at the top of this topic in terms of stunt people not getting recognized nearly as much. And we've briefly mentioned this before, but I'm curious how you guys feel, especially, I've not talked to either of you about this in the past, but do you guys feel that there should be like an Academy Award or a Golden Globe or something for these people that are risking their lives and giving us these awesome sequences?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, they're risking their lives for your entertainment. And I mean, it takes talent. It takes a lot of preparation. And I mean, you have to really know your stuff in order to pull this stuff off safely. I would think that, I mean, this would be a nice technical award that they could give during the Oscars, you know, when they have a best art direction and blah, 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 and all that stuff. You know, throw a stunt guy a bone.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, you have to talk about a group of people who have to take pictures that some guy drew up and go, okay, so you want me to do what now? Right. You do know buses don't jump over bridges, right? Okay. Oh, you want me to do it anyways? Okay, I can figure it out. Don't worry, I can do this. But you know how it's not how physics work, right? Okay, no, I can make it happen anyways. I mean, it's amazing how these guys do that. It's amazing the kind of thoughts they take. They take somebody's crazy imagination and say, Hold my beer. I got this.
Exactly. Cars don't fly.
Cars don't fly.
Cars don't fly. Well, that's what we thought about our topic. Let's go ahead and read our listener comments. We've got a few here. We posted this on our Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/Hollywood Outsider. We posted this question earlier this week, and here are some of our responses. Josh, you want to go ahead and take the first one?
All right, so Steve Peterson's our first. He says, the hallway fight scene from Inception, it could have easily just been done with wires and CG, but the fact that they built a hallway that could rotate 360 degrees and choreographed an amazing fight based around that and just did the whole thing for real is insane. That is actually a very good suggestion. That's an extremely cool scene. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually know they built the hallway just to move around 360 degrees. I thought it was just camera tricks.
Oh, so no, it's like on hydraulics and everything. They kind of tilted the whole thing and while they were in there. It was really cool.
I should probably watch the special features on that Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah. It's a good one.
I did not know that.
Now, you know what? Do you guys have a limit as to how much CG is allowed to be in something before you credit it as being a stunt? Or do you guys not have a limit to any of that?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on how the scene turns out and how much danger there actually was involved in it. I mean,
danger.
Do you consider wires to be, you know, extracurricular? I mean, that's
no. I mean, they're kind of a necessity. I think they should use the less amount of CG as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. But I like things as practical as possible. I think it just looks better. You know, I mean, there's many movies where it's just like, oh, come on, guys, that was CG, you know. I like how they kind of use both, how they do practical things and they just kind of layer some CG over it to kind of enhance it a bit. Mm-hmm. I think that's usually the way to go.
I agree.
Okay. All right. So, Aaron Peterson, since I am not here this week, the truck chase scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, masterfully staged and cut. Totally agree with that one. That's one of my favorites, too.
And that's another one where he did it himself. That's all him doing that. And they tried to talk him out of it, and he said, nope, I'm doing this scene. And I actually just recently rewatched that one a couple days ago, and man, that movie still holds up just so well. And that scene in particular is so engaging and so dangerous. It's one of those where you're like on the edge of your seat, even though I've seen the movie dozens of times, and you just wondering if he's going to make it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely. One of the reasons why I think that one still holds up is just the time period in which the movie takes place, but also the amazing amount of work they put in that movie still makes it hold up pretty well.
Absolutely.
But Aaron, I mean, honestly, it's not as good as the Shia LaBeouf monkey.
Oh boy!
From Crystal Skull. Okay.
Oh, did you say Shia LaBeouf?
Shia LaBeouf.
I think I like calling him Shia LaBeouf. I think I like that.
Shia LaBeouf.
The Boof.
LaBeouf. I thought it was LaBeouf.
No, it is Shia LaBeouf. You said Shia LaBeouf with an L.
Yeah. That's not what I said.
Which is funny. All right, Peter Dennis says, the early Jackie Chan stuff is always pretty far out. Rumble in the Bronx had some great stunts. And I love this one, too, because, you know, obviously I said I like actors that do it themselves. But one of my favorite parts of watching any of his movies is waiting for the credits when he does the outtakes. When he hurts himself. And it's like you realize.
Yeah, the inevitable, like, you know, he's in a crutches or he's in a wheelchair and then he's got to stand up and do something.
Yep.
Yeah. And it just goes back to my comment earlier, too. Like, Kung Fu movies are so much fun just to see how crazy they get physically in some of those scenes. Manuel Perez, he says, I love the stunts from the first two Mission Impossible movies. Two stand out from Mission Impossible 2. The first stunt in the beginning with Tom Cruise in the rock climbing scene was awesome. Got some Limp Bizkit blaring in the background. I also love the motorcycle chase scene from the end. Fantastic and totally insane, but freaking cool. And can we just go back again? That's another movie that got hated on that I thought was really good.
I did not like the second Mission Impossible movie.
I liked that movie. And it was John Woo.
It was
John Woo. Yeah.
You know what? I'm confusing John Woo with the actor that he likes to use all the time. You're right. It's John Woo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Chow Yun-Fat?
Yeah, that's who I'm confusing John Woo with.
That was when John Woo was still good. Now he's not so hot.
Yeah.
That one was highly stylized as far as a movie goes, but I do love those stunts. But the whole doves flying everywhere kind of thing it was so done. After it did it in that movie, you kind of like, okay, How many more times?
Yeah, he did that in Face Off as well. Yep. And then the one with Chow Yun-fat that was Republican. The name's not coming to me for some reason. But
Replacement Killers.
There you go. Yep, did it too.
Standout stunts for me. This is from Philip Thompson. Standout stunts for me, to me, are the ones where it's just too crazy and it just blows your mind. Some of the best are in The Raid and Raid 2. These movies are crazy. If you're a fan of martial arts, please watch these movies. They will blow you away, guaranteed.
I need to see those. Everyone talks about those.
You haven't seen those?
I've not seen The Raid or The Raid 2.
Oh, man, you need to correct that like right now, like right when we get off this show. Let's go watch them.
Everyone just raves about them. I got to make that happen. So.
Oh, they're so good. I saw them both in theaters, and they're two of the best theater experiences I've ever had. I recommend the first one more than the second. The second one is super, super good too, but it's a little more crime drama with just a lot of really killer action sequences. The first movie is just a ton of fun. Have you seen Dread, the Judge Dredd movie?
Yes, the new one.
Yeah, it's that movie's kind of ripping off the first Raid film. It's very similar.
Oh, really?
How they climb a tower. Yeah, they're in an apartment complex that goes up this massive tower, and at the top is a drug kingpin, more or less, and they just climb the tower, and they're trying to get higher and higher and higher to get to basically like a video game to the boss at the end, and just like Dredd did it, but I think this movie did it so much better, and the action is just cooler, and yeah, I love that movie to death. I like it a little more than the second one.
Mm-hmm. We got more love for Jackie Chan here. Both Ty Nelson and John Sanford had things to say. Ty said, Jackie Chan stuff is my favorite, but I want to go with something a little more recent. Tom effing Cruise. Hanging off the side of a plane after some glorious running, of course, in the most recent Mission Impossible movie. And John also said, Jackie Chan sliding down a skyscraper in Who Am I is for me his craziest stunt. Absolutely insane.
For sure.
Yeah.
Aaron Peterson said, I have to concur. Tom Cruise ain't got shit on Jackie Chan. Chan wishes he had as many safety precautions as Tom Cruise has.
That's a good point.
I like Jackie Chan more, I got to say. I think his stunts are cooler. But, I mean, obviously Tom Cruise's are more dangerous looking, but I'd like to see him pull off some kung fu. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather not. Let's just stick to running.
Yeah. Did you see that someone like took a video of all the shots of Tom Cruise running in every movie and like spliced them all together into one YouTube video?
Yes.
No, I didn't.
That is hilarious because he like looks exactly the same. Like he's just got his signature run. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's really, really funny.
Yeah. He's just topped out the entire time. He's just it's not even like a normal. He doesn't do a jog at all. It's just he's standing still. Full sprint the entire time.
Yep. He's got one top gear.
His hands out too. Like his arm, his like hand will be sitting straight up and he does that like that thing with his hands. I can't really describe it very well, so people probably don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but he does it. I'm telling you, he does.
Kyle Boggs, physical stunt. I would say to try to keep it somewhat modern would be for stunts for Jack Reacher and John Wick. Both individuals do their own stunts, etc. Except the driving. Or the shooting. And they're entertaining and very well done.
I appreciated the stunts in John Wick. I just wish I liked that movie more. I feel like I got to give that one another shot. Because everyone loves that one, and for some reason I didn't.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you there.
Okay.
I like the movie, don't get me wrong. It was very good, but it wasn't as good as people make it out to be. And I thought the action sequences weren't quite as cool as everyone makes them out to be. I mean, I think I've seen better. I've seen it done better. But I still like that movie. I'm really excited for the sequel, regardless.
I'm really excited for the sequel. You know what? I needed I got everything I needed to know about John Wick when the big bad mobster is like, you hit my son for what reason? And he did something to John Wick. Oh. And then he hangs up the phone. Okay, well, I know we're in for a crazy movie because the big bad gangster just like backed down for the mention of someone's name.
Yeah.
I will say the second one looks pretty sweet, though. I'm kind of on board for that one.
Yep.
And our last comment comes from Thomas Bex, and he says, all the stunts in Mad Max Fury Road, absolutely bonkers, just completely insane. They should give Oscars to stuntmen, and that team would have deserved it enormously. You know, I didn't even think about Mad Max, but those guys on the giant poles – in that movie, like, that is just nuts to me to think about doing that, because all I would be thinking that entire time if I were swinging on that is this pole's going to snap. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Especially when they're on the poles and then they jump onto the actual cars.
Yeah.
And like, they got all the spikes and everything on them, and I could just see a really bad accident waiting to happen there.
Well, wasn't there – I think there was a bad accident during the filming of that movie.
I think there was, really? Yeah. I can't remember.
I have to look it up, but I think there was a bad accident. You know what, listeners, if you know that there was a bad accident, put something in the comments. We'll go look at it.
Definitely.
Did someone get impaled by anything?
I don't think it was that bad. I think it was more like landed on off of a moving car or actually got run over. I could be mistaken, though. I'm sure someone will correct us on that. So,
ouch.
Well, thanks, everybody, for contributing to the comments there. That was a really good conversation. Glad it worked out well. And I feel it's strange to me that we're this many episodes in and we haven't talked about stunts that much. So that was a lot of fun. Good topic. What's this movie? Before we get to what's this movie, we do want to take a second and extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com. We really do appreciate the support. And also for our $10 contributors, we want to give you an extra special shout out. And those $10 contributors, they get to demand what we watch and what movies we review, among some other options. And Jim Stein has actually been our first one to demand that we review something. He has said that we have to watch and review A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes, so because he hates me.
Because John hates Christmas, apparently. And right. I actually really like that movie. I've been looking for an excuse to rewatch that one, even though it's in the off season, so to speak. So I'm really looking forward to checking that one out. But yeah, thanks so much to all the subscribers. We really do appreciate it. It helps us keep the lights on here and helps you give you extra content down in the future. So, all right, back to what's this movie. Each week we do pick a movie suggested by either our host or a listener. The person has the option to either play a clip, offer you a what am I, a riddle, limerick, haiku, or reenact a famous quote from their movie. If you think you know what the movie is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. or through the contact tab in the app, and we'll give you a proper host shout-out on the next episode. Last week's clip was Aaron's pick, and that movie was Escape from L.A. Those that guessed it correctly were Manuel, Anthony, and Jason, and several guesses at Clint Eastwood movies, which prove Aaron can replace him in any future remakes. this week is actually my chance to try to confuse you guys, so here's my clue. And I don't have a recording, but I decided to write a little limerick for you guys. So I'll give it to you here. I'm really interested to see who's going to get this one. I can't decide if this is too easy or too hard, so I'll let you guys tell me as soon as I finish reading it what you think. Are you ready?
Good to go.
All right. There once was a man on a mission with a pricey and stolen munition. So he said with a shiver, I'll hide it in a river. Now the states have the keys to the ignition. I'll say it one more time for you, just in case you didn't catch it. There once was a man on a mission with a pricey and stolen munition. So he said with a shiver, I'll hide it in a river. Now the states have the keys to the ignition. What do you guys think? Too easy? Too hard?
I can't think of which one that might be.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble too. I'm stumped. Right.
So I stumped you. Yep. I guarantee you at least one or two listeners that I have conversed with in the past will get that one. So we'll see how many get it. I'm excited. All right, we'll go on to our spoiler-free reviews. And what we're going to do, we've only got one movie to review this week that both John and I saw. Josh, you have not seen Split, correct?
I have not, but I plan on going to this weekend and seeing it. So I'm a week too late, unfortunately, but I am seeing it this weekend.
All right, and before we get into the review, I'm going to let John lead it off, and we'll be very, very careful not to spoil anything, because this is one that you definitely do not want to know anything about the ending, because there's some really interesting information. But just as a sidebar, we also have a written review on the website that is done by our very own Amanda Sink, so be sure to check that out. And John and I are actually going to have a little bit of a spoiler discussion at the end of this episode after Josh signs off, because I am dying to talk to somebody about that final shot there, because it's pretty cool. So, John, for those people that aren't familiar with this, what is this about? Can you give us a rundown?
All right. The rundown is three girls are kidnapped by a man diagnosed with 23 distinct personalities and must try to escape before the apparent emergence of the frightful new 24th. This stars James McAvoy, Betty Buckley, Anna Taylor-Joy, and Haley Lou Richardson. And what can I tell you about this movie? Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you that it has a lot going for it. It seems like the partnership that M. Night Shyamalan and Blumhouse, I don't even know how this house production team calls it. I think it's Blumhouse. I think the partnership is working out really great for them, for the two of them. The way Blumhouse does a lot of movies is they really restrict the amount of money they're going to put into something and force really creative people to come up with something good and tight off of these tight budgets. And So they put less money, but they end up making a lot more because so far they've hit it out of the park with every movie they produce. But these two, this partnership is great because M. Night did The Visit with them. It's working out pretty good. Let's see. It's a tight and very personal assortment of characters that you spend your time with. Casey, played by Anna Taylor-Joy, is a lovely character that has some strength to her, but she's very much just trying to survive. She's just trying to get past school. She's just trying to get through everything. She wants to be left alone, but she is still a great character. One thing that upset me, though, for her character and probably for the movie and how the writing worked out was the explanation as to why she is the way she is. It's not a very pretty subject matter. It pisses me off when people go for this one. There's better ways to tell the story. And it really got me to a point where I nearly just shut down from the movie. But James McAvoy is the reason why I stayed and I didn't leave. And he made me forget very quickly why I got mad at this. He knocked everything out of the park. Each character he plays was distinct and different. It was amazing to watch the changes in his mannerisms. It was amazing to see the changes in his face. He really did look like somebody different each and every time. And it was awesome to see him play with this. It was awesome to see him do it. And it was just fantastic. And the way M. Night shot the film was pretty cool. Instead of being wide by any means, you're tight. You are right on top of everyone the entire time. It's kind of cool. It really makes you feel nearly as confined as the hostages. It's really unsettling. It makes you try to like look around the corners because you know something's going to jump out at you, or it makes you feel like when something does happen, you can't get away from it because it's going to happen in your face. It's really cool. It's really strong. It's something that's going to be. It's something that you would come to expect from the same guy that made The Sixth Sense, Signs, and Unbreakable. And like Scott mentioned, the last 5 minutes were so neat. It makes the movie 5% cooler. What do you think, Scott? What do you got? Did I address everything you think?
I think you covered it perfectly, yeah, and without giving too much away, it was great. I am so glad that Shyamalan is back, because I adored The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, and I like Signs. I like The Village, a lot of these ones that people really, really dislike quite a bit.
Signs is his best movie. I'm just going to throw that out there. I take that back. Unbreakable is probably his best movie, but Signs is really close.
Yeah, they're both fantastic films. I think I've seen The Sixth Sense at least 20 times. It's just so good to go back and pick apart that movie and pick up the little clues that you missed. And it was so good. I've fallen off the wagon with him as of late with things like Lady in the Water and The Happening, and just Devil was okay, but this just feels like a return.
Well, he didn't direct Devil.
He didn't direct it. Okay, my mistake.
He produced that one.
He only produced it. He didn't direct it.
Okay. This one just feels like a return to form, and there's something about the way that this movie is shot that just feels like a Shyamalan movie. I don't know how else to describe it. There's just something about the cinematography and the tone that the characters use outside of the crazy acting from McAvoy. And to echo what John said, his performance is outstanding. One of those that, to me, deserves recognition from like Oscars and things like that. I don't know if he'll ever get it, but it's just insane the level of detail that he went into every single character. I never would believe that he had an English accent in real life.
Yeah.
Like he pulled off like a New York or Boston type accent or whatever, like perfectly. It's just insane. And like you said, the mannerisms and the way he carries himself across the room with different characters, it really feels like you're talking to a different person in each scene. It's just something very, very special to see. And the ending just – I love walking out of a theater and just – what did I just see? What does that mean? And it was just such a jump up and down excited moment. So what's your did you give your final verdict, John?
I didn't give my final verdict. I wanted to throw in some more things about McAvoy. When you do go see this movie, pay attention to every little bit of his mannerisms, because his mannerisms tip you off as to what's going on, and they'll tell you who he's being or who he's trying to be. So it's something that's really cool the way he does that. It's just awesome. As far as like how M. Night shoots things, there's something that he does that I think a lot more people in Hollywood need to try to do, which is he actively tries to hide from you or hide things from you that will scare you. He he's more about scaring you with your own mind than showing you the blood, every bit of blood and guts out of something and saying, here, look at this. He's very much more of like, I'm going to make you think about why that's gross or why that's scary versus show you. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really cool about him. But yeah, so getting back to my verdict on it, if $10 were the full price of admission, I'm giving it $6.50. I want to give it more, but I really hated I really just absolutely hated the backstory for the girl. It pissed me off, but $6.50 is where I'm going to be at.
I liked it a little bit more. I gave it $8. It was highly engaging. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it did have some minor flaws just in pacing. I think it dragged a little bit in spots, but by no means any reason to stay away from this movie. It's kind of one of those that you just gotta find out, gotta check out for yourself, because it's McAvoy alone is worth the price of admission. So really, absolutely. Really glad that he's back, and I hope to see more from him along this realm instead of the goofiness that he's done in the past. So. Again, we're going to have a spoiler discussion at the end because I'm chomping at the bit to talk to John about it, because we've kind of avoided it even over the week talking about it via text, and I want to go into some detail there. So,
hey guys, this is Aaron, and I am interrupting your regularly scheduled program to give you a quick review, because these guys didn't bother to go see Triple X, Return of Xander Cage. Why didn't they? Because they hate America. That's why. So I'm going to tell you real quick. Vin Diesel is back as Xander Cage. Now, I know everybody thought he was dead. Turns out he wasn't. He faked his own death. Isn't that crazy? I don't even know why they bothered to make that a whole part of a movie and made an Ice Cube version, but whatever. So he's back, and he's recruited very easily. So the fact that they say that they can't find him during the movie is insane, since they found him in about 34 seconds. And the reason that they bring him back is because a comrade is assassinated, and there's a weapon known as Pandora's Box, which just sounds like an ass-kicking machine, is out there on the market. And a terrorist group led by Donnie Yen, who is fantastic in every fight scene he does, is basically going to utilize this weapon for we don't know yet. Xander's recruited by Toni Collette, who takes the place of Samuel L. Jackson for reasons you have to see the movie for, and he assembles his own team. Puts together like Ruby Rose, who's an up-and-coming actress, and she's basically a sniper. Then you got Rory McCann from Game of Thrones. Then you have, I think it's Chris Wu, who basically plays a DJ. Because, you know what, when you're taking on terrorists, you need a DJ. Thumping beats, that's important. They go after the Pandora's Box, and then things go crazy. Is this movie any good? It depends on your definition of good. If you think quality storytelling is important, you're probably not going to like it, because the script, I'm convinced, was written in crayon. If you are looking for something that is deep and meaningful, yeah, you shouldn't watch this either, because you'd probably get more depth out of a real Triple X movie, if you know what I'm saying. But if you're looking for something that just balls out retarded and ridiculous and insane and bonkers, then yes, this is the movie for you. It is a super fun, super ridiculous, super absurd movie that I had a blast with. But it's hard to call it a good movie because none of it makes any sense. The stunts are insane. They actually motorcycle ski on the ocean. It's physically impossible. There are so many ridiculousness acts of defying gravity that I don't even know where to start. Put it this way, the Fast and Furious movies seem more plausible than anything now. I mean, everything in there seems realistic in comparison. The stunts are insane, but everybody's having a great time. They know what kind of movie they're making. It's one of those movies that you might love it, you might not, but I had a blast with it. Just know that it doesn't take itself too seriously, and Vin Diesel looks like he's having the best time he's had in years, even though I still can't figure out what the hell the DJ's doing there. Regardless, I had fun, but keep in mind, the plot is dumb. $10 the full price of admission, I give XXX Return of Xander Cage $6, and I can't wait for another one. Apologies for my hotel microphone, now I'm going to return you to your regular scheduled program with these yahoos. And please remember, if you do watch XXX, no, you cannot surf a cell tower. I'm almost positive you'll die a horrible, horrible death. Have a great week.
Also, just real quick, before we get into Blu-rays, the numbers for this movie have been surprisingly solid. Would you have ever guessed that Split was going to out ticket sales XXX?
Yes. Really?
Yeah. Triple X is, no, I'm surprised they even made that movie, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's January, so this is a dumping ground for movies to begin with. So to have something to the level of what Split was done in January was just perfect. It was perfect movie for January.
And I think the premise is what really sold this. I think that's what grabbed people. If you see a trailer, it piques your interest. And I think they did a really good job of making a compelling trailer with Split.
Mm-hmm. And from what Aaron told me, they got like double the amount of sales that they were anticipating on this thing. So the marketing and the intrigue has just really worked, because I'm looking forward to seeing what the final numbers are when we get to that hopefully next week. So
yeah, they've made their money for sure.
Definitely. And that means more Shyamalan. So, and I'm surprised I'm saying that's a good thing.
Here we come.
don't you put that curse on me.
All right, we'll go into Blu-ray and video on demand releases. We've got a few here on disc, just three of them. These come out on January 31st. First up is Boo, a Madea Halloween. Madea winds up in the middle of mayhem when she spends a haunted Halloween fending off killers, paranormal poltergeists, ghosts, ghouls, and zombies while keeping a watchful eye on a group of misbehaving teens. None of us reviewed that one, so I don't have a score for you, unfortunately. We've also got Jack Reacher, Never Look Back. Jack Reacher must uncover the truth behind a major government conspiracy in order to clear his name. On the run as a fugitive from the law, Reacher uncovers a potential secret from his past that could change his life forever. Aaron reviewed this one on episode 249 and gave it 650, so I'm definitely going to be checking that one out. And the last one we got on disc is Masterminds. A guard at an armored car company in the southern U.S. organizes one of the biggest bank heists in American history. It's based on the October 1997 Loomis Fargo robbery. This one stars Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, Zach Galifianakis, Jason Sudeikis, and Owen Wilson. And boy, that sounds like a great comedy right there with that lineup for the cast. But sadly, Aaron reviewed this on episode 246 and gave it $2. I think he said it was one of the most ridiculous, stupid comedies he'd seen with almost no redeeming qualities, which is really, really sad. I think that might be the lowest score.
Absolutely hated that.
Yeah, I think that might be the lowest score I've ever seen him give. So that's kind of crazy.
Galifianakis just can't get a break, man. Everything he's releasing is just not good.
Yeah, I feel like he just needs to stick to Hangover movies, but I don't want any more Hangover movies.
No, please no. I was done after the first one.
And Video On Demand, we got three as well. On January 24th, A Patch of Fog. A security guard catches a famous writer / television host shoplifting and blackmails him into becoming friends.
That sounds like a good story. That's how it works, right?
Sounds like the cable guy a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of does.
January 27th, I Am Michael, a gay activist and magazine founder, is saved from his homosexuality after returning to God. I had to read that one twice to see that I've read it correctly. I don't know if I'm going to touch that one, but... and the last one, actually, Aaron talked about this movie last week. He got to review it, and I believe he interviewed the director?
He did.
The director. Get the Girl. A wealthy young man is conned into staging a fake kidnapping in order to be a hero and win the affection of a girl he's madly in love with. But when one of the hired kidnappers is accidentally killed during the charade, he's forced to actually save her life while not revealing that it's been a ruse all along. I want to see this movie so bad. That just sounds like such an awesome concept that I can't believe it hasn't been done by now, but it sounds really good.
Yeah, we've all been there before, right?
I've totally staged robberies before to get a girl to fall in love with me.
Look, I'm a hero, damn it.
John, it is your turn to talk, man, because I have been talking for quite a bit. So we're going to move to our Ho trivia game of the month. What do you got for us?
All right, so today we are going to do something we haven't done in quite a while. I don't think since I've been on the show we've done this yet. So we're going to do Recast the Classic. Each of us are going to be assigned a character. We're going to recast that character, see how we can take a classic and make it fresh and new again just by changing who is there. So tonight we're going to do Tango and Cash.
Man, it's been so long since I've seen that movie.
Yeah. Been a very long time, yes.
But it's, you know what, it's a good classic. It's one of my favorites, and I know it's somebody else's favorite, but because they're not here, we're going to do this one. This is what Dad gets for leaving us with the controls on our own, right?
Absolutely.
So we're going to do Sylvester Stallone as Raymond Tango is going to be done by Josh. Kurt Russell as Gabriel Cash is going to be done by Scott. I'm going to take the villain. I'm going to take Jack Palance as Yves Perret, and I'm going to recast him. So let's start with you, Josh. What do you got?
I think Guy Pearce would be a good replacement for Sylvester Stallone in Tango and Cash. He's got that nerdy kind of look to him, but also kind of a tough guy look too when he needs to be. I just when I think of Stallone in this movie, for some reason Guy Pearce pops in my head, and I think he'd be a good replacement.
Oh my God, that's amazing shooting from the hip right there, because Guy Pearce, if you take Guy Pearce like he was built for Lockout, mm-hmm. and add that nerdiness that that you're talking about, or that stockbrokerness that Stallone had in the movie, yeah, because Guy Pearce was built in Lockout, so yeah, I think that's actually perfect casting right there.
Yep, pay me, Hollywood.
What do you got, Scott?
Oh man, I purposely gave myself Kurt Russell because I know that no matter what I pick, it's going to piss off Aaron. So I mean, seriously, there's nobody
Miles
that's
Teller,
going.
Miles Teller, isn't it? It's Miles Teller.
Oh
Miles
man, I wish I would have thought of that. Miles Teller is as Gabriel Cash. That's my pick right there. Let's go for it. No, actually, like when I sat down to try to figure out who we wanted to get for this, I was stumped, guys. Because who do you get to replace Kurt Russell? I mean, that dude just has charm and charisma and what I did is I actually asked my wife, because my wife, believe it or not, loves Tango and Cash. She loves this Good movie. Girl. I know, right? So we toyed over some ideas and chatted about it a little bit. And she goes, well, what about somebody from Sons of Anarchy? You need someone quippy and all that. And so we toyed around with Charlie Hunnam, and that's become my backup. But we eventually landed on somebody that is a little bit outside the box. And I don't know if he's going to go well with Guy Pearce, but we'll see what you guys think. Justin Hartley. Are you familiar with this actor?
I'm not.
Justin Hartley is – he plays Kevin on that TV show This Is Us, that drama about the family.
Okay. Okay. I know what you're talking about now.
He plays the younger actor.
Oh, okay. All right, he was Green Arrow in Smallville.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't watch Smallville, so is he – is that a good pick, or am I way off base?
There's actually somebody that came to mind that might be better, but I mean, it's your pick. So, you know, you want Justin Hartley, you get Justin Hartley.
I kind of like your backup pick better.
Charlie Hunnam?
Say. Yeah, see, especially combined with Guy Pearce.
Yeah, I think it would go better with Guy Pearce for sure. I think Justin Hartley, he's a little too pretty, maybe. I don't know, but
I think that's... You know what? I'm going to take back my. If you're going to try to recast Kurt Russell with anybody in this movie, the only person that has the kind of charisma that Kurt Russell had in this movie is actually Channing Tatum.
Man, you're real. I can hear Aaron seething all the way over from where he's at right now. I can just feel the blood boiling.
It's going to be directed by Darren Aronofsky.
Yes, yes, right. Yes, The Fountain 2.
Yes. All right, so for the replacement for Jack Palance, which if you remember how Jack Palance was in this movie, he was larger than life, and at some moments he's all crazy and then he starts yelling and screaming for no good reason, and so I wanted somebody who could do mustache twirling and just menacing and crazy, but at the same time look very businesslike. And so the only person that came to mind that really fits the idea would be Bryan Cranston. I think Bryan Cranston would be the perfect guy.
I like that idea, actually.
I think pretty much you say play the villain in this movie and you say Bryan Cranston, I'm sold. I mean, yeah. Just seriously.
Or so, man, who am I thinking of that can do that really well, too? Oh, my God, the villain in Leon the Professional. Why can I not think of his name?
Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman. He might be a little older, but man, he does that flip the switch stuff really well.
I want to see him play a villain again in anything.
Everyone!
Oh, that line was so good. What do you mean, everyone? Everyone! So good. I want to watch that again now, too.
Yeah, he was great. Blu-ray around here somewhere. I need to pop that in again.
Mm. He was great as the villain in Eli. Book of Eli?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, that sounds like a solid movie. I think we're gonna have the Aaron Peterson stamp of approval on that one. What do you guys think?
I don't know. Who did we finally land on for Kurt Russell? Did we land on Charlie Hunnam for sure?
I don't. I think we're gonna just have like an amalgamation of all three of those people just play it. You know, in some scenes it's gonna look more like Charlie Hunnam, and other scenes Channing Tatum, and other scenes Justin Hartley. Just to mess with everybody.
I like it. We're breaking the rules. Why not just go with that one as well, too, right? All right, well, we're getting ready to wrap up here. Any recent film or TV recommendations that we haven't previously discussed?
Let's see. Netflix dropped season 2 of Voltron this last weekend, and I sat down and I wanted to not watch all of it, but it's 13 half-hour-long episodes. It's really kind of easy to watch all of Voltron, and I know it's a cartoon, but I'm a grown-ass man, but I still watch cartoons, especially when it has to do with Voltron and how well these guys did it. They did a beautiful job creating a adult-friendly kids cartoon that is interesting. It's got a neat, deep story to it, a lot of great history to it, and it's not nearly as episodic as the original cartoon was. So it's got a really nice serialization to it, nice long form. And then conversely to that, they also dropped Frontier, which is Jason Momoa's new show. And I got it. I might be good. I may have to try to watch that first episode again, but because I was so tired when I tried watching it, it was rough. But yeah, I don't know if I care about what happens in Canada enough to watch this one.
What?
Well, it takes place in Canada. It's all about this fur trapping in Canada and how it's just things that happen in Canada is what it really is. It's yeah.
All right.
If you guys have started watching this show, please tell me that I need to keep watching it, or don't tell me that. Just tell me that it's not good. I need some help because it's Netflix. I feel like I should love it. I don't. And I have an issue with that.
The only thing I've really been watching that I mentioned it last week, and again, I'm breaking the rules, but I am so knee deep in Shameless right now, guys. That show is freaking hilarious. I decided I was going to go to bed early last night, and I always fall asleep watching something, and next thing I know, it's 2 hours later because I had to watch 2 full episodes, and I just can't stop watching it. I don't know why it took me so long to watch this show. It's the last time I'll mention it, but if you haven't checked that out, seriously, give it a shot. It is so twisted and jacked up, but funny at the same time. I really, really like it a lot. So, Josh, anything that you've seen?
I was sick last week, and I took a day off, and I binged the entirety of Stranger Things in one day.
Nice.
Because I've been clamoring to see that for the longest time, and I just haven't had the time to sit down and watch it, and I was like, well, I'm going to be home. I'm going to be sick all day. I'm going to be laying around. Now's the time to do it. And I knocked out the whole thing, and God, that show is so good. I cannot wait for season 2 of that. Like, I liked it so much that I will make time to make sure season 2 gets watched.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm sure you guys probably talked about that enough on this show, but I just really enjoyed Stranger Things. It was right up my alley.
Absolutely. I adored that show. I didn't get to watch it in one sitting like you did. I had to do 2, but the only reason was because I was too tired to stay awake. And as soon as I woke up, I turned it back on and finished it up. So it was solid show, and I can't wait for more. So,
yep.
Totally. Any recent outrage in entertainment news or events that happened in this past week? Anything that pissed you off? You got to get off your chest?
I'm outraged out right now. Let's just move on.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Let's just all be nice to each other this week. How about that?
Can we just hug? We just hug and be nice to one another.
Yeah, let's
do the Bill and Ted ending.
The Bill and Ted ending. We'll see what happens. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Be sure to join our Facebook group as well as Twitter, which is @BuyPopcorn. Also, stay through the credits because we are going to have, as I mentioned earlier, our spoilerish topic on Split. We're going to talk about that ending because I am chomping at the bit. For other episodes and reviews and other info, you can go to TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Email is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. And remember to grab the Ho on the Go with your Apple or Android apps, Spotify, or subscribe in our podcast of choice. John, thanks so much for joining me, man, and putting up with me as hosting this week.
You know what? It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, so you're welcome.
That was like a backhanded compliment, but all right, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It didn't suck as much as I expected it to.
Well, I expected us to come all the way off the rails, and I wanted to see this go down in flames. That's where I wanted to be.
Well, thanks for the support, man. I do appreciate it. And Josh, thanks for joining us, man, over here. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. So we'll have Aaron back with us next week running the show. So don't unsubscribe from the show just because I'm hosting it, please. Please and thank you. And as we head out, guys, I want to remind you, next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. All right, and John and I are back. We had to say goodbye to Josh as he has not seen Split, so we didn't want to spoil anything for him. But, John, let's talk about those last 5 minutes. And
oh, because, Jesus.
Holy cow. when everyone said you have to see this movie and you have to, you know, that last shot, I was expecting something that was going to be mind-blowing, but in a different way. I thought it was just going to be like a reveal for within the story. But what we got instead was something that alludes to Shyamalan's next project. Do you want to kind of clue everybody in as to what that was? They obviously know if they're here for the spoiler section. So,
well, he's officially announced that his next movie is going to be a sequel to Unbreakable. So yes. That's what we got. We've got basically a through line where we see that this movie, Split, is actually in the same universe as Unbreakable. And it kind of sort of explains some of the physical attributes that our main character from Unbreakable had.
Mm-hmm.
And it explains how people's minds can do some supernatural things and make their bodies do crazy things. So it was really cool how they put that through line in there. And oh my God, if he had an eye patch and was Samuel L. Jackson and his, and just standing there with a leather jacket and said, I'm here to talk to you about the Avenger thing,
the Shield
initiative. Yeah, it felt like that moment in Iron Man when you saw Samuel L. Jackson at the end and he wanted to talk to you about being part of the Avenger initiative. That's how cool that one moment was.
Well, and it's kind of a tribute to Bruce Willis too, because I didn't even need to hear him say the line before I went, holy crap, that's the dude from Unbreakable. You know what I mean? It was just the way that he carried himself, because he was kind of like a shy, demure guy in that movie. You know, he didn't have a ton of charisma. He was just kind of quiet and reserved. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of sat there and very calmly said, yeah, it was Mr. Glass. Just the possibilities and the reveal that this entire movie was far more than just a, you know, story of the survival of our main character, but it was in fact an origin story for the villain for the next upcoming sequel to Unbreakable, which blew my mind. And that was just so fantastic.
It really was. I'm super thrilled to see what could be happening next. I haven't been this excited to see what could possibly come out of a movie in a while. So like Star Wars excites me. Anything that has comic books excite me. But this is the coolest thing ever to find out that something that M. Night created how many years ago was Unbreakable?
Oh, my goodness. It's got to be over a decade now, at least, right?
Yeah, at least a decade. Maybe even longer. You know, something that old has shared universe. The possibilities are kind of endless.
Oh, totally.
Because it's all new. It's all, as long as he sticks to whatever ground rules that he's laying out for himself as to what people's capabilities are, it will be very neat to see what we're going to get. I'm super excited about the idea of getting a universe out of this. It's kind of cool. Go M. Night, man. Good for him.
Seriously, can you believe that it's 2017 and we're like excited about the next Shyamalan movie? Like genuinely pumped for it. Who would have thought?
It's going to be interesting to see him take those old school values that he has from filmmaking and make a universe movie out of it.
That's a really good point. Because can you imagine like a superhero movie with a tone of a Shyamalan movie? Like it sounds unique and interesting, and taking that type of movie into a way that I never expected, and can't wait to see how he makes it work.
Yeah, it'll be very neat. It'd be like if Hitchcock had a shared universe going on with all of his movies. It's gonna be neat. I don't want to say that M. Night is back, or he's back on top, or he's on his way up. I don't want to say anything exemplary like that. I don't want to be hyperbolic about it. I don't want to say anything like that. Did he do a good job? Yes. Did he did he entertain us? Yes. Has he done it twice in a row now? Yes. So it's looking good. The chances are he's back on a trend. And I think part of that is because Blumhouse really hamstrung him in his budget. Mm-hmm. I think when you start giving him a crazy budget is when he starts coming off the rails. Now, I'm an apologist when it comes to Lady in the Water. I never saw The Happening, and I didn't see Last Airbender. So those, I think, are the three big ones that people have problems with, right?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
So I think that's still, as far as like win versus loss ratio, that's still a pretty good ratio.
Oh, yeah. If you look at all the previous ones, I mean, he had a track record, and it's always been kind of his shtick, so to speak, to have that twist ending. And I love that he still managed to throw a twist in here without it being part of the main story. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was expecting something to happen before the credits that just blew my mind and made me think of it completely differently. And I was kind of refreshed that it didn't happen. I'm like, finally, we got, you know, just a good old regular movie from him without having to be thinking about that in the back of our minds. But then we got one in such a way that just wasn't expected. It was almost like it's become a joke, right? Where you think, well, if it's a Shyamalan movie, what's the twist going to be? And you find yourself trying to pick it apart. And strangely, I wasn't really trying to do that with this one. But we got it anyway, and he still surprised me. And kudos to him, because that he I think he's back. I know that's speaking a little bit early, but I think he's on the mend. He's not on the rise. I think he's on the mend.
I think he's right in the middle where he needs to be.
Yeah. And he's actually confirmed it. We had an article from Ain't It Cool News that that said that he's actually gone on record and said that, yep, that's his next, it's his next film. It's what he's working on now. So it could be sooner than later. And man, just the prospect of that is very, very exciting. So
it is very exciting. I'm excited to see something new that's a shared universe. It's still in its infancy, but I'm really excited to see what he can do, especially seeing how there's nothing to draw from except for him.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, he's not like going off of a Marvel property or a DC property. He can do whatever he wants in his little head.
Right. So only thing I hope that is that he just sticks to his own ground rules that he lays out for this universe that he's making. So, what was really cool about, I guess what, you know, part of what I thought was really cool about how like the transformation for
McAvoy's
character went, he transforms, and they talk about what he's supposed to look like. They talk about how he's supposed to be, you know, 7 feet tall, and he's supposed to be have rock hard skin, and he's supposed to have huge, huge hands that are twice the size of his hands away. And he has this long, he's supposed to have a long mane of hair and bright red eyes. None of that actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as externally is concerned, but internally, and this is what's kind of neat about it, because internally he's that description. Externally, the only real big difference is that he's got all these veins popping out all over his body. Mm-hmm. But yet he still is bulletproof. He still can climb on the surfaces you wouldn't think a man could climb on. He still can do a lot of things. So it's really neat to see that maybe that's what's happening to these people in this world that he's creating, where externally you see the person, internally there's whatever the monster or the angel or the demon or whatever else it is that's inside of them. Internally, their abilities and their powers look a different way, and it'd be kind of cool if they had and I'm going way above and beyond, and I'm spitballing at this point, but if they had a character that shows up who sees people for what they really are on the inside, as far as these special people.
Mm-hmm.
And when he sees McAvoy's character, he sees the big, tall, scary-looking dude. And when he sees Bruce Willis's character, he sees the opposite of, or he sees the superhero that Bruce Willis's character is, or whatever kind of visual look that character has on the inside of him.
Right.
Oh boy.
It's really interesting. And my question is, in the inevitable sequel, are we gonna get more Sam Jackson as well? Are we gonna see these two villains fighting together against Bruce Willis's character? And is it going to be balls to the wall, you know, comic book style action in this? I mean, he can do the action. As much as people don't like The Last Airbender, he still can do it.
Mm-hmm. The possibility is there. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, why limit yourself? He has the characters. He has the possibilities there. He has nothing but his own imagination to work with. He's got everything going for with him. And I just realized that a couple minutes ago, I went straight up comic book artist and went into thinking things out there.
That's all right, man. You're an artist. That's how it works, right? All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for sticking around and hear us chat about that a little bit. Hope you guys enjoyed the movie as much as we did and are looking forward to it as much as we are. So we're going to sign off one more time. So just to remember, next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.